Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th of October, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news, and that's right, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding out in the Badlands and the Mesas. And we have Dennis ably taking his place and so far doing a magnificent job.
Well, yep. I've had to do so far is tell everybody who I am.
And
so
you
I
manage that.
Yeah.
Did not forget who you are. So
it's good to know.
Really, you're ahead of the game at this point.
And the other key thing to remember, folks, since Steve Ray isn't here, that our live broadcast
on
YouTube will not be viewable.
It's part of my rider. It's how I maintain my anonymity so people don't stop me on the street.
There you go.
Right. We're not allowed to show Dennis's face.
That's right. It's just in silhouette.
Contractually obligated. And then we have to change his voice.
Well, I'm Dennis Worcester.
No, this is my changed voice.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Normally, he sounds...
Nick, you're going to have to start coming to rehearsal.
You're right. I don't do rehearsal. Ask anybody who performed with me for 20 years. I don't do rehearsal. All right. Like all of its predecessors, the first version of this new version of Windows 10... is fraught with problems.
What?
Unbelievable, isn't it? Windows 10 version 1809, that is to say the September 2018 version 1809.
That's how they do that.
Which came out in October.
Because Microsoft?
Because Microsoft. they've stolen Linux's
approach,
numbering
yes.
scheme. Yeah.
Okay.
It was released Wednesday, and it has triggered tales of locusts, frogs, lice, hail, boils, and the death of every firstborn son. But one problem stands head and shoulders above the rest. Many people report that the upgrade from Windows 10 version 1803 to version 1809 removes all of the files in their documents, pictures, music, and videos folders.
Bum, bum, bum.
Isn't it special?
Special. The folders are still there, but there's nothing in them. No one seems to have any idea why that's happening. We're all still looking at all the reports, trying to discern a pattern. But according to an intrepid reporter on Spiceworks, there is a solution. If you run the free version of Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A, and I'll put a link on the website eventually. I'm busy at the moment, you may notice. And that's from the Sea Cleaner people, so a well-known product.
Okay.
You'll find that, and that's an undeleter. Remember undeleters?
I do.
They're back.
From my DOS days.
Exactly, and they're back. You'll find that all of the files were deleted, not moved, not erased. Since they were simply deleted, you can recover them. But there is a caveat, and pay attention to this. Don't do anything until you download and run Recuva. Anything you do to your machine may disrupt the deleted files.
Oh, like defragging.
Oh, right.
And make parts of them unrecoverable. Also, Recuva is pretty advanced software. You may prefer to take your computer to a reputable dealer. Why didn't Microsoft catch this bug in beta testing? I don't know. It doesn't happen to everybody, but it does happen. Best guess is there's something specific in the logic for upgrading from 1803 to 1809. A situation that isn't frequently tested in beta cycles, where the emphasis is moving from one beta build to the next beta build.
Right.
So they didn't move from the real one to the next beta, or to the next real one. How long until Microsoft officially acknowledges this bug? Hard to say. In the meantime, remember to lock down your machine to prevent 1809 from installing. And for heaven's sake, don't click check for updates. To block Windows Home from updating, mark your internet connection as metered.
Okay.
And that tells Microsoft, in effect, that you're paying for internet by the bit and you don't want to overload your connection. There's no guarantee this approach will always work. In Enterprise and Pro, you can do other things, but Microsoft will override them and update you anyway. So far, they have not overridden metering.
Hmm.
so far.
Mm-hmm.
So no promises, but it doesn't look like Microsoft has ignored metering specifically to force upgrade on blocked machines. And like I said, I'll put all this on the website. But right now, you click your internet icon in the lower right hand corner, and select network and internet settings, change connection properties, and if you scroll down a little bit or look down a little bit, depending on the size of your screen, you'll see set as metered connection. And once you do that, it will not automatically upgrade you.
Question.
Yeah.
If you are downloading this Recover tool.
Yeah.
And you're downloading it to the same drive where you think things may have been deleted.
Yes.
Would that be a... should you go do this at a friend's house and put it on a USB stick and then bring it back?
Or download it to a flash drive.
Well, that's what he's saying. If you download it to a friend's house.
For those of you without friends, you could grab a USB stick and download it directly to the USB stick.
Right. Yeah. So you can... Yes. And that might help. If you have to install it, of course, then all bets are off.
Right.
But so you will lose something. Metered connections do have a little odd side effects. Selective downloading that's occasionally hard to predict. But if you don't have pro enterprise or education, it's pretty much the only way to dodge the forced upgrade bullet. In addition, as Dennis just said, if downloading and installing anything may overwrite at least one or two things,
right,
that were deleted. Now, this is, of course, all moot. For those of you who have backups.
You wonderful, intelligent, good-looking people who have backups.
Right, right. Remember, taking a backup makes you safer, healthier, gives you whiter teeth, and makes you more sexually attractive to whatever sex you want to be sexually attractive to. So remember to make your backups.
Hmm.
And do it all the time.
Right. Now, just to be clear, if you think you might be missing things, this is something you don't want to put off. I do know that there are online backup tools that will look and see what things have been erased and then dutifully replicate that in your backups as well.
Right.
I'm thinking of Backblaze, who has like a 30-day window.
Yeah.
If they see things that are deleted and have been deleted for more than 30 days, then they assume, oh, well, it turns out they don't need that. We'll remove that from our side, too.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. Stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 Update 1809 can delete all your documents and pictures. Your choices are, I'm fine, thanks. How do I stop it? And now you tell me. So far we have 22 votes. The number one answer is... Is I'm fine, thanks, but now you tell me is a little is up there.
It's catching up.
And I know you'll have more to say about this one. So you can do it online if you don't like talking to humans by scrolling down on the right under fascinating stuff. You will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the number one poll discussion is 6 October 18, Windows 10 Update 1809 can delete all your documents and pictures. So far, we've got three people who've made posts in there, and you can do so, too. And then, of course, if you'd like to vent live or simply discuss this... give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. It's kind of, somebody in the forum asked if it was deleting updates to make room, deleting things to make room for the updates. It certainly would empty your trash and delete your temp files.
Yeah, all your cache stuff.
But even Microsoft's not stupid enough to delete all your documents and pictures and videos.
We want to believe that.
We want to believe that. We don't know if it's true, but...
And yet here we are.
And yet here we are is exactly correct. We know that updating anything is fraught with danger. I don't care if you're on a Mac.
It's a risk.
Or a Windows machine or a Linux box or a Chromebook. I don't care where you are. There are dangers. Now, you don't have to worry about it with a Chromebook because The reality is that unless you've been saving a bunch of stuff to your local hard drive, it's all up in the cloud anyway. But if you've been saving it to your local hard drive, you better back that up. And for everything else, always, always, always back up before you do an update. Now, with Windows, since the Windows updates are essentially the Spanish Inquisition, which...
nobody expects.
Exactly. consequently, you better be backing up every single day.
But that's the beauty also, though, of a Chromebook.
Right.
You're not running the Windows operating system.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about those stupid updates, nor the patches, or anything else.
Right. But, as I said, if you are saving things to your Chromebook's hard drive locally and not saving them to the web, you better be backing them up.
Mm-hmm.
Because things can happen to Chromebooks.
Oh, yeah.
Just like anything else.
Chromebooks,
it's hardware.
Anything. It's an electronic device.
Right.
And it's not if it's going to fail, it's when.
Right. One of my Chromebooks, I got a message one day that said it's completely borked. That's a technical term. I can't boot. I can't do anything with it. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to put the operating system back on as if it was fresh.
Okay.
And it did. And 15 minutes later, I had all my stuff, all my apps, all everything, like it was a brand new machine. But of course, everything that had now I don't save things only to the hard drive. But had there been things saved only to the hard drive,
bye-bye,
those would have been gone.
Yep.
No matter what. So, it is absolutely essential that you are making backups. And when you...
and it's not really about the backups. It's about the restores. Everybody wants wants your data restored if there's a problem. And the only way you can get to that is if you make the backup in the first place.
Right. You didn't do a backup, you ain't got no restore.
Yeah, you don't have one, you don't get the other.
That's right. It's like, insurance. If your house burns down, you don't really care that you paid in the insurance. You care that they're going to get the money back out of the insurance.
Right. Right. And honestly, backup is cheap insurance. It takes hardly any time at all.
And
nowadays, what you can buy online as far as extra storage space, how important is your data to you?
Right. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to say that to my students. Let me get this straight. You couldn't spend $8 for a new thumb drive to do a backup. But I can spend 2 weeks of my life getting the documents off of this thumb drive.
Well, or you could spend $40,000-$50,000 this year to come to school, but you couldn't afford $8 for a flash drive.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah. There's that. There's certainly that. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Hey, I'd like to know if you might be able to give me some information on where I can get some recourse on some shoddy graphics card that I bought that doesn't work. I bought it in a local retail store, and I followed everything on the minimum system requirements. I got lousy customer service. When I called up their support, they were just totally unreasonable about everything. It was like a GeForce GT 1030 PNY. I can't get this darn thing to work, but I had all the system requirements, and it should have worked. And I couldn't get anybody... I tried every driver. I got a 4 operating systems on this computer. It's an older, like Dell OptiPlex 780.
Right.
I buy refurbished stuff that's older for under $200 and use that. I'm not on the internet with it. But I tried drivers for Windows and Linux because I got 3 Linux systems and one Windows 7 on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, basically, what happened is, when I installed the driver for Windows 7, everything went on perfectly.
Yep.
But the thing is, it kept crashing on me. And every time it crashed, it would say something like, this crash is a result of some hardware you put on there. So obviously it was this. None of the drivers work. And I spotted the oldest one that they had available as a driver, a new one, and one in between. None of them worked.
All right,
they
Steve.
All did the same thing. And Linux, I couldn't install any of the Linux drivers. I kept getting a message that said I had to do something to manipulate.
Okay, Steve, we got to take a quick break. Stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Steve from Rochester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Rochester, New York on the line. You still there, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so here's the deal. It is possible one of two things. Well, okay, here's what happens. Often, when you put a new card into a machine, it doesn't know the old card is gone. And it's fighting
the old drivers.
With the other drivers. So you first need to, A, make sure you do not have another physical card in there. And B, you may need to go into your BIOS and shut down the onboard video card. Although it's supposed to turn off when it notices a new card that's gone in.
What previous card did you have in there?
Just what was integrated on it, right on the... It was like a chip right on the motherboard.
Okay.
It was an integrated one. The problem with Linux, though, is like when I get into that, any of the operating systems, all three of them do the same thing. The normal display settings are gone, and everything is all stretched out horizontally on the view. The 1920 times 1080 is gone, and they got just two bizarre settings that work, but everything's all stretched out. That's without the driver input. I tried to input the driver on the Linux, and it keeps telling me I have to do something with the kernel to adjust it. And that's far way ahead, above my head doing that.
Right, right, right. It is certainly a possibility that the card you have is not compatible with Linux. I don't remember. I had a GeForce, but it wasn't this number.
Have you tried Googling to see if it is compatible with Linux?
I've gone to NVIDIA's website and PNY, and they referred me to these drivers that should work.
Yeah, there are open source drivers for NVIDIA that are built into Linux, and there's if you use the built-in NVIDIA drivers, that should do it.
Yeah, but like I say, I only get those two settings and everything's stretched out. See, I don't do gaming. I just use this for graphic arts, especially Blender. And I wanted to get faster brushes running on some programs, you know, for bitmap type stuff and pixel art.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The thing is, like, on this Vision, I've got an other computer, an older one, on a Radeon 5450, an older one.
Yeah.
That works great. It works on all the Linux and the Windows perfectly well.
Well, that's why
the thing is, their customer support was just terrible because first they're telling me that I had the wrong BIOS. It wouldn't work with the older legacy CMOS. And they told me I needed a UEFI. Then somebody, I said, well, why didn't you put that on the package? I wrote back to them. Somebody said, oh, that person gave you the wrong information. We're sending them back to training. It should work on any. Then they told me to try it on another computer, and I had a disaster doing that. I don't even want to get into it. It's a long story, but it sounds like
it's time for a refund or an exchange.
Yeah, the card itself is not good.
Yeah, I asked PNY for that. What can you at least exchange this for something that will work? They refused to do it.
No, then you call your credit card company and say you want to do a chargeback.
Yeah,
or call customer support up and ask for an RMA because you put it in there, and what you tell them is, it doesn't boot up.
Right.
Doesn't boot at all.
I was thinking.
So they've got it, you know, they'll have to sit there and say, oh, okay, it's, like I say, I just get a black screen. If I take the card out, computer boots fine off the other. If they're going to be that way about it, you know, you're going to have to just use a different tactic and say, you know, it's not working, which it isn't. I mean, you're not lying. It's just not working.
Right.
Yeah, get it back to them and let them prove that it does work.
Yeah, because they're going to have to send it back, you know, exchange it out for something else, and send you another card while you send that one back.
Yeah. All right. Would it be a good idea to at least make a complaint with the Better Business Bureau or something?
It certainly wouldn't hurt, but I would try this first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've tried everything with them, and they're just unreasonable. I don't know. I just...
If you use the credit card to make a purchase, this thing costs
three times as much. And the only reason I bought this instead of a Radeon is because the Radeon one I was looking at, I would have had to upgrade the power supply. And this one was at the minimum requirements of that, so I tried this instead.
So, yeah, let the manufacturer give you the best options that they can. And if they aren't going to work with you, then you probably have some protection with whatever credit card you used to have some satisfaction there. But one way or another, I'm confident you'll either get your money back or get your get a card that works for you.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Right. Good luck.
Thanks for calling, Steve.
Yeah, sometimes it's just working with a particular manufacturer or working with...
And like you said, some of those drivers just might not work with those particular BIOS. I mean, when you get those tech folks on there, they're just going by a cookbook that says, oh, it should.
Yeah, you know, they've got a laminated list.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda. And, you know, different versions, the chipsets that can be on a motherboard are so vast...
Right,
they're just using you, giving you a generic, yeah, should, because this and this and this. But yeah, all it takes is some different version.
Right, or firmware on the card itself.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because there's a lot going on in the system nowadays, folks. And,
right.
You know, trying to mishmash all this together. You know, the drivers for your networking, your sound cards, your video. All your communications, USB ports, and everything else, mouse, keyboard. Sure. There's a lot moving around in there that, you know, you got to do a lot of juggling. So,
especially if you want to run what I'll call alternative operating systems like Linux, you know, it was originally designed by somebody who said, you know, I'm not interested in running something that somebody else wrote.
Right.
I want us to run our own stuff, and I want us to know what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
But... That's not a great way to be sustainable. You have to get a user base that's really broad, and there aren't as many people who are that interested in the details as you are in
right.
the world. So it makes it tricky, and you end up with an OS that makes perfect sense to the person who wrote it.
But now, I will say, I own a Dell. It's
sure.
not an Optiplex, but I own a Dell, and it has an NVIDIA card in it.
Uh-huh.
And I have choices of two drivers, the real NVIDIA drivers and something called the Nouveau drivers.
Okay.
And it depends on how purist you are. The Nouveau drivers are fully open source and free and blah, 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 blah.
You could inspect the source code if you chose to.
Right. And the NVIDIA drivers are, of course, proprietary.
Proprietary. Yep.
I've tried both, and both work just fine on that motherboard with the particular... graphics card I have.
Right. You've got a match that works well there.
Right. But if you're not using the Nouveau driver or the NVIDIA specific driver, or your card is not right. I mean, I don't care how good your drivers are or anything else. If the card is not right, then there's an issue.
Right.
You know, and the reality is, there is, in the computer industry, there are dead out of the box hardware devices.
Yep.
That's just a simple fact.
Yep.
And not necessarily dead, but just not 100%.
Yeah, flaky.
One chip has gone bad, or one solder joint.
It's got a crack in it.
Resistor or anything else that was kind of weak, and the minute it got a power put to it, it pops it.
Right.
Or
it doesn't completely pop, but just gets wonky.
Or your system may not have a power supply that can supply sufficient power at the rated voltage and amperage that you need in order to drive that card.
Right, because he was saying that he would have to go for a different power supply for the other card.
Right.
So that makes me wonder, you know, for the price of power supplies nowadays, you know, just step it up, and it's better to have more than enough than not just enough.
Right.
Right. Right. So, and you may be exactly right. It may just be that his graphics card is not providing his power supply is not providing quite enough power to the graphics card.
It's just enough. It's minimum.
Yep.
Just enough.
Like
you
kept saying, minimum. Well, sometimes, yeah, it's just like they say, you know, you can run Windows 10 on an old system. It will run very fast. No. And that's where we were telling folks, don't bother doing the update, because, yeah, the minimum requirements are just that, minimum. And don't expect it to be a speed demon by any means.
Right,
that's true.
Right. I have that. I have an older desktop now that I don't use much anymore. I'm going to turn it into a headless server at home. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I discovered it reboots itself. I don't care if you're running Windows or Linux or anything on it at all. It reboots itself every once in a while. And I pull the video card And now and then use just the internal video, which is lousy.
Yeah,
well, just basic.
But it works.
It works fine.
So clearly,
on the screen, yeah.
Right. Either the card itself is not 100%.
Sure.
Or the power is just not quite enough with that card in
it. Or the driver. Or there's lots of potential.
Well, as happened with Steve, it crashes in Windows and Linux, both. So I'm thinking it's probably it's
something
probably
more common.
Hardware-y rather than software-y. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to turn it into a headless server.
Right.
I don't know what I'm going to do with a headless server in my house. I really don't know. So I'm doing everything in the cloud these days.
Oh, you know, it's perfect for Halloween. The Ichabod, you could name it Ichabod.
Yes, exactly right. I'll name it Ichabod.
Winter's coming, so it'll keep that room a little bit warmer.
Yeah, that's right. It certainly will keep the room warmer. And a
little byproduct, RG&E can help you out with your electric heating with computational side effects.
Exactly right.
Byproducts.
Oh, I can go back to, it's a very powerful machine, so I can run SETI at home on it.
Okay, so we can finally find those aliens.
We finally, at last.
We've been looking for those for decades.
We can do that. I suppose I could mine.
I was going to say
Bitcoin, but cheese and cracker. No, yeah, I think we're past the point where
just about the same amount of money doing either one.
it costs more in electricity to run a Bitminer than you make Bitmining.
Yes.
And that's so. I could be wrong, and God knows there's a whole bunch of people who run bit mining and they're perfectly happy doing so.
Go for it. It's your life.
Different strokes for different folks.
I'll happily donate time and electricity to SETI at home.
Sure.
Because it's not just SETI at home, it's folding at home now.
Yes, so, yes. Yeah. That's the one that's more about finding proteins.
Right, folding proteins and finding cures for diseases. I still call it SETI at home because
that's the original one,
and that's what I started with. But now it's very little SETI and very lots of folding stuff. And I'm perfectly happy to give it time and electricity for that.
In my younger years, I used to do a thing called bovine.net. Bovine.net was a group of people who were all agreeing to run a client, and its goal was to try and brute force encryption to see how long would it take to actually brute force a particular type of encryption.
Nice.
And you could install this on as many machines as you wanted, and they would all form together and all work on a very small piece of the problem and all phone home with their results.
So it was a voluntary botnet.
Yes. That's a great way to think about it. It was a voluntary distributed supercomputer.
Yeah.
Based on all the machines you had available. And that was a lot of fun to do and to see the stats and to form a team with your friends and try and recruit more people. And it would change your whole way of thinking. You'd walk into a room and see people with computers and you'd say, hey, are you doing anything with that computer?
You'd
give them the spiel and they'd say, oh, that's kind of cool. Let's try that. Because they would also give away cash prizes if you were the person who found the result.
Oh, nice.
Now, this was 20 years ago that I did
this.
But it was a lot of fun. And as machines became more powerful, you could really see the improvement. But then they'd eventually find the key and they'd move on to the next longer flavor. And for a little while, you were finding them every year and a half or so. And then when they jumped up, it's been like 15 years, they still haven't found it. So it's a good way to talk about encryption and how changing the length of the key.
Well, and that's the deal with Bitcoin, isn't it? Back in the day, people were finding Bitcoins every couple of days.
Sure.
And now, generating Bitcoin every couple of days. Now, unless you've got a super cluster, you got nothing.
That's right.
Speaking of,
and even then, you may not have anything.
That's right. Speaking of a cluster, I now have two Raspberry Pis.
Okay.
If I had another, say, dozen, I could create a super cluster of Raspberry Pis, which would give me enough computing power.
Do they call that a bake shop?
It's a bake shop, which would give me enough computing power to really do something like folding at home.
Right.
Right now, a single Raspberry Pi is a little underpowered.
They make some neat kits that you can either 3D print or order, and it allows you to just stack them all together, I've seen.
Yep.
That's some neat stuff.
Yep, and I was looking at one of those the other day. Like I said, I have two Raspberry Pis at $48 a piece because you got to buy. You can buy the Raspberry Pi, but then you have to buy the power supply separately.
Right.
So that's a little different.
We'll reset and talk about what these things are probably after.
Yeah. We'll talk
break.
A little bit about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can remain member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Now, for those of you who listen to us all around the world, you should know that we generally record this show on the weekend and right after lunchtime. And with all this talk of Raspberry Pis at lunchtime, I have to admit I'm getting a little hungry. But I think we should probably reset and talk about what is a Raspberry Pi in this context. And yes. I think what we could start with this by saying it is a
great little device.
It's a great little device. Would you call it a hobbyist computer? In the same way that the stuff from the 70s where you'd buy the circuit board and then wire up all your own stuff?
Yeah, what it is a single board computer. So you buy this thing.
So it's a circuit board with components on it.
Yeah, it's got the heat sinks.
It's got heat sinks. It's got an actual processor on it. It's got four USB ports. It's got an Ethernet port.
Wireless.
It's got wired. It's got...
How do you do the storage?
External sound.
There's a small micro SD card.
There's a micro SD card slot, and okay. Of course you can add anything to the USB.
Yeah, right. Any of the USB ports, you could hook up an external hard drive and
put a couple
save
of
it
gig
up.
On it if you want to.
Yeah.
All right, so what do people do with these?
Everything.
Can you be more specific?
Well, okay. You can...
give me your top three.
Yeah, okay, my top three are you can create a web server.
Okay.
You can create a backup system.
Uh-huh.
You can, if you want to, turn it into a retro gaming device.
Okay.
You can run Kodi.
Yep, Kodi.
On it and do entertainment stuff, audio, video, yada, yada, yada.
Music.
You can make it a regular music server. If you've got all your music, you want to send it out into your house.
I know about Plex. Is Kodi like that? I haven't heard of Kodi before.
Similar.
Kodi, yeah. So you can, with Kodi, you can sit there and tune into various music channels, say, is one example of it, all over the world.
Okay.
Tap into that, and you can, just like some of the other services that are out there, and just stream it through your house.
Oh, okay. So it's a reception tool for internet audio?
Right. Audio and a lot more.
And video and pretty much everything you want to do.
Yeah. So it's a tuner.
Some of which is legal, some of which is not.
Right.
Understood.
But the model, so for example, the Raspberry Pi 3 Model B Plus is a whopping $35.
Okay.
Now.
So for the upcoming
holidays.
Hold
on, though.
You got it.
You have to add. It doesn't stop there. You do have to add the power supply for $10.
Uh-huh.
I would say get the kit. The kit can get you all in.
For 45 bucks.
I was going to say 70 bucks. If you go for the little bit better power supply that has a switch right on the side that you can turn the unit on and off.
Okay.
And it comes, like I say, with the micro SD card. I got a little keyboard, miniature keyboard with mine, so it does it wirelessly.
Right.
And like I say, the box, the case, so you can set the board in and protect it so you know it doesn't get damaged. Doing things to it because it has the side port that you can hook up the ribbon cable, and it has the all access to the USB ports, internet, your power supply. Like I say, it's just a great little device. But go the little bit extra, and that way you're fully complete, ready to do anything else. And like I was saying, the other little plastic cases that come with it.
Right.
Help protect it if you're moving it around, hooking up other stuff, because these, you know, there's little heat sinks that you got to put on this thing too, and they could get knocked off if you didn't put it in a case.
Okay.
Right, and if you're at, for example, at Canakit, CANAKIT.com, you can get the Pi 3 Model B Plus Starter Kit with a 16 gig a micro SD card for $75, 32 gig card for $80.
Yeah.
And that is now, and that includes the actual Raspberry Pi 3 Plus, which is a 1.4 gigahertz, 64-bit quad-core processor and a gigabit of RAM.
And they're able to do all this with just passive cooling?
Yep.
Yeah.
Dual band 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz wireless, an Ethernet port, class 10, which is a high-speed micro SD card, the power supply, cable with noise filtering, and a bunch more stuff, a case,
so as the weather
HDMI
gets,
cable, everything.
As the weather gets cooler, and we're looking for more indoor hobbies for the, you know, the 7 months of the year that we have.
Right.
What I've had.
Whether we may not
want
to be outdoors.
Well, for under $100, you get a complete computer. Now, it's not going to be the fastest machine you'll ever own.
Right.
Right.
But it's less than $100.
With an HDMI port, you can connect that to any modern monitor. Right. And with the USB ports, you can connect any modern keyboard and mouse.
Right.
And then you can get, I'm guessing, a third-party operating system to do what you need to do. And it's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Yep.
So if you want to use wireless peripherals, you can definitely do that.
It runs Linux. It runs various forms of Linux, and it also will run embedded Windows, Windows for Internet of Things.
Okay.
That's what I've had a Raspberry Pi, I think, for it's got to be about 4 years now.
Yep.
All right.
I've been using Raspberry Pi.
Yep. And it's a very cool
it
thing.
Was
you can get a kit that turns it into a Google Home.
But you know one problem, though, Nick?
Microphones you got to have.
It comes with a kit.
Oh.
Microphone, speaker, the extra logic board.
What's the problem?
No, the problem could be
yeah.
You get it, and it's like going back to you and I at my shop, and you introducing me.
Yep. When I introduced you to the internet.
Yeah, when we first got on there and loaded it all up. And I was up all night.
He was.
The Raspberry Pi, you start doing some research in that you can do with this unit.
Yeah.
That could consume you. They might not see you for a few days.
Right. And you can get them, like I said, at canakit.com or Adafruit.
Right.
.com, I think it is.
Because I remember I...
Yes.
Do they sell these at local shops, too?
You know what? I don't know if anybody sells them locally.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Because I got my two on online, you know, through Amazon. And
right.
Yeah, you can get them through Amazon, you can get them through
anywhere. I forget where I got it, but like I say, I got it. And that was the whole problem. I go, because that's back when I was working at Home Depot. I'd sit there, work at Home Depot, come home, and then I could be up until like 2 o'clock in the morning doing all this research and trying different things, because it's so cool. You can't, you know, it's hard to mess up. You can wipe it out and restart and do backups and all that. It was just a lot of fun learning that stuff.
It really seems like it's kind of the Sinclair of the modern era.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of a hobbyist machine that you can expand and bend to.
Yeah, and you're not going to really fudge it up that much.
Right.
And yep.
There's not a lot to damage.
Yep. And so, yeah, you can buy one of these and play with it. And really, the days, here's the sad thing. When we started, you're young. But
you,
when we
you
started.
Hear that, listeners?
Yeah.
I'm young.
He's young.
That's right, ladies.
When we, there you go. Ladies. When we started, pretty much this is what you got. You got a board. You got a box to put it in, and everything else you did.
Okay.
Yep.
And nowadays, of course, you just walk into a store and point and grunt, and they hand you a laptop.
Yes.
But
pay for it with your phone.
And pay for it with your phone, and you just, well, you never know, you're nothing. But with something like this, we go back to the days where you actually get to play. You get, and it's not
discovery. There's
it's
discovery.
Remember having to put the old memory chips in with all those little prongs, and all it took. Because you had to populate a memory board, and all it took was one prong to get bent underneath.
Yeah. And you were done.
Oh, you were toast.
Yeah, the dip sockets.
Yeah.
You were absolutely done.
I can remember doing that to my PC Junior.
Yep.
And I had to load up the memory board because I got all these chips. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. And I was so careful to make sure every little pin, because they'd want to bend.
Yeah.
And it took me so long just to do it because... go to do it, and then one would want to bend. And, shoot, pull it out.
Yep.
Well, yep. Yeah, and you had to put in a fair amount of force to get them to be into that
socket.
Yeah. Because you could either solder them into the traces on the circuit board, or you could put them into
these had little sockets.
We didn't have any stinking solders. We had sockets.
Yeah, it's sockets, and you had to slide them into the sockets.
Yeah. But you can make, here's something you can make. We were talking a little bit about this earlier. You can make an FM transmitter.
Okay.
So you could actually broadcast your, now, it can't be a powerful FM transmitter.
There,
you need
there
a
are
license
limits.
For that.
There are
but,
limits.
But there are certain frequencies and low power that you don't need a license for. And,
okay.
And the Arduino, not the Arduino, the Raspberry Pi kits that come with it enforce that. Okay,
uh-huh.
So, but you can create a Raspberry Pi box that blasts your music all over your house. So you can tune your FM radio, or if you've got a phone that does FM,
uh-huh.
or you can stream it to your phone,
right?
Over Ethernet. So there's just an amazing number of things you can do. People turn them into all kinds of things. We were talking about this during the break. You get a 9-inch monitor, you slap a Raspberry Pi on the back, and throw in a wireless or a wired. I mean, it's got four Ethernet ports, USB ports. So you stick on a mouse and a keyboard, and bang, you've got a computer.
Yeah. You could build it yourself.
I attached mine to my television.
Now, we should be clear. There's no soldering involved.
No.
There's nothing where people are going to have to do any type of...
Certain
super technical
kits.
Things.
If you buy some of the kits, like the FM transmitter, you might have to solder a lead somewhere.
But just to build a rough,
it's a single board computer, and that means everything is on that single chip,
and it's ready.
You're
to go.
Done.
Okay.
You can, if you want to put it in a case, you snap it in.
Uh huh.
If you want to plug something in, you plug it in just like you would do a real computer.
Okay.
$35, you got a computer. $10, you got a power supply.
Hmm.
It's a very cool thing.
And you've got your own internet kiosk at that point and can do and look up anything you want.
Yeah, you can hook up anything you want to it, and it works great.
Amazing.
Like I said, I've got mine running hooked up to my television so that I had a monitor, and I threw a keyboard and a mouse on it. I'm very tempted to buy one of those little $25 Bluetooth keyboards with a mouse pad.
I got two of them.
Yeah.
And I love it because it's got the mouse pad right there. Yep. Move around. You can do all the typing on the screen. Well, you know, it's all wireless. And
everything old is new again. That's how I grew up, was with mini computers connected to a TV.
Yeah.
You know, we had the TRS-80 in my house, and my friends had Apple IIs and other stuff.
Yeah, but I connected my TV up via HDMI, so it's a little bit different than the RF transmitter.
But, you know, we're not sitting on the floor of the living room anymore with the machine in our laps.
I can't sit on the floor of the living room anymore. All right, we got just a couple of minutes. We better get to the phones. We better talk to Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed? At least we can get your question in.
Well, I just had a quickie. I saw an ad. I think, get your impression of it. It was for a Chromebook.
Yeah,
it is for Chromebook from a big store,
okay.
And it's let me see, it's got here, it's 11.6 screen, it's got 4 gig memory and 16 gigabyte EMC storage, and it's a big name, it's Hewlett-Packard Chromebook, Intel Inside, etc. But the thing retails for $219. It has on sale for $179. Is that
get four of them?
What's going on? You know,
get four of them. Here's the deal. The Google is this week, on I believe the 9th, Google has a big announcement. We don't know what they're going to announce, but one thing we're seeing is new Chromebooks. And they will be more powerful, and they will be bigger, and yada, yada, yada. So as with when new Macs come out, the old ones get cheaper.
Right.
When new Windows machines come out, the old ones get cheaper. When new Chromebooks come out, the old ones get cheaper. And it looks like this ad you saw, they're getting a little jump on everybody else.
Yep, they want to clear out their shelves and be ready for the new stuff.
And that doesn't mean those machines aren't useful. They just aren't going to do quite as much. So the new Chromebooks will also run Android apps. The new Chromebooks will also run Linux apps, but they will also cost considerably more. So if you don't need to run Linux apps and you don't need to run Android apps, you can buy an entire HP Chromebook. I have a 14-inch HP Chromebook, 4 gig, 16 gig, and I love it. And $179 is a decent doggone price for it.
Well, when you brought up a good point, should you wait till the new ones come out since they got more bells and whistles on them?
Well, the new one certainly will have more bells and whistles, but it depends on whether you need those bells and whistles. Me personally, I would wait to see what the new ones have and then decide if those bells and whistles are something I'm willing to pay for.
Or go buy one, take it home, set it on the kitchen counter, wait for the new announcements to come out. If they turn out that the new ones are the ones you really want, take the old one back, get a refund, and go order the new one.
Yeah, you could do that too. But yeah, whichever way you go, $179 for an HP is a pretty decent price. All right.
Okay, so that's what I want to know. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. We are going to take a quick break. Actually, we're done with our entire first hour, so we're going to take a slightly longer break. But we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Dennis Worster, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Sound Bites, and there's a whole nother hour coming up on Jazz 90.1. We'll see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
Still?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You look a lot like him.
I get that a lot.
No, that's his brother.
Oh, it's his brother. Mm-hmm. But it's 5 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member supported. And more about that later. Jazz 90.1. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to Scotty from Greece, New York. Hiya, Scotty. What's up? Scotty?
An old Compaq with Windows on it.
Scotty, I'm sorry, we missed the first part of that. Could you start again, please?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
I have a Compaq, an older machine. It's a Passerio.
Oh, right? Yeah.
With Windows on it. So I need to buy another machine, and I'm not sure where to go because there's so many options. And I've been told, I guess you guys keep talking about a Chromebook. I don't know if that's the way I should go or.
Well, Scotty, what is it you do with your
computer?
Yeah,
that's the key thing.
All right. Well, basically what I do is I just surf the web. I guess a complex program to run would be like running some weather map programs. And then I do emails, and I have to, I have myself a handyman business, so I have to do documents,
right.
I've got a Canon scanner with Wi-Fi, so I got to be able to communicate with my Wi-Fi.
Sure.
Canon. So it's a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is really basic, it's just general purpose.
Well, if you have a specialized program that you run for your business and it needs Windows, then you have to buy a Windows machine. And also, if your scanner is old enough, it won't talk to anything but Windows anyway. So you might want to look at a Windows machine. But are you looking at a desktop or a laptop?
I'd rather have I got a laptop, and I can tote that around if I want. So I don't want to be stuck to a desktop.
So you want a laptop?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you're looking at laptops, then more important than pretty much anything is the warranty.
Yeah.
Because laptops get banged around. So even if you go to one of the big box stores, laptops are pretty much a commodity these days. We always tell people that they should buy locally because keeping your money local is better. So you can go to, one of the reputable local dealers. Most of them in this area certainly are very reputable, and purchase a laptop from them. Or like I said, online or through a big box store. The important thing is look at the warranty. And in addition, if they offer an extended warranty, it's probably worth it because laptops get banged around. That's
and the other thing, though, buying locally as opposed to going to the big, you know, box stores, right, is you've got a face to talk to.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you go in and say something goes wrong on it, the big box store is going to sit there and say, okay, well, we got to pack it up and send it back to wherever, and you're going to be without your machine. Whereas if you do it with a reputable place here in the city, they can usually fix it, you know, sooner than that, and they're going to stand behind the product that they sell.
Yeah, okay. we don't recommend individual places just because there are so many good ones. And we're on public radio, and that's there's laws. All the dealers in town, very good people, very reputable people. Check them out. They're all
and see how they treat you. Walk in there and see which one you gel with,
and see the type of the type of warranty and the support that you're going to get.
And again, when you walk into a local store, as Dennis said, you get a feel for the atmosphere in the place.
The vibe.
If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. In addition, ask them to give you a list of a few customers. If they're a reputable dealer, they will be happy to do that. And then talk to those people. You're not spending car money, right? So it's not quite, you don't have to quite go to that level if you don't want to. But even so, it's not, you're also not spending cigarette money. So, well, these days you are.
Huh.
But, but, you know, spend a little time, do a little research. It's often these days not so much about the hardware you buy as where you buy that hardware and the warranty that you get with that hardware.
One thing that I would suggest, depending on the program that you're using, when you're getting this laptop, make sure that it has its own graphics card on board. In other words, you're not sharing the memory with the computer and the graphics.
They might call that something like discrete graphics.
Yeah.
Rather than
onboard graphics.
Onboard. So
integrated.
Integrated
or onboard are bad. Discrete or separate are good.
Yep.
Correct.
So you want it to have its own separate memory, so it's not taking from, say, if you got a 16 gig machine and part of that's going to the video versus the video card having its own dedicated memory.
Right. The other thing that's good about a local shop is you can probably take in the laptop you have, and for a nominal fee, they will move your information over to that new machine, so there's one fewer step that you have to do.
Right, which is something that most big box stores will not do.
Yeah. No, they won't touch it.
Okay, that's good intel. I noticed I was listening to the station that you talked about a retune of old machines, and there was a website you could go to, and I didn't quite catch the name of it, of this website, to take an old machine and make it useful again.
Oh, sure. If you've got an old machine, one of the things you can do is go to a site called Neverware, NeverWare dot, hold on.
Is it .org?
I think it's, no, it seems to be .com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's .com, neverware.com, W-A-R-E, neverware, as in software or hardware.com. And they have a product called Cloud Ready, which turns an old machine essentially into a Chromebook.
It's called Cloud Ready?
Cloud Ready is the name of the software. Neverware is the name of the website and the company.
Copy.
Right, and I have put Cloud Ready on half a dozen machines over the years.
Right,
it's great.
It turns them into essentially Chromebooks, which is like a web terminal.
Like the old days, a dumb terminal that you just turned it on and then you were connected to some server up in the cloud.
Right,
that's basically what you're doing.
Now, as we said to an earlier caller, there are levels of Chromebooks now. The newer ones will run Android apps and Linux apps. Cloud Ready is more like the old ones. It doesn't run Android apps, and it doesn't run Linux apps, but it runs all of the Chromebook apps. So you're not really missing out on anything. And, oh, by the way, it's free.
And could I use that on that And then my stereo.
Yeah, you'd probably have to go to the website and see if it's listed as a compatible item.
Right. Not every old depends on the age and it depends on the chipset. So not every old laptop just works.
But you can certainly go and check it out. Yeah, check it out.
And that'll tell you pretty much everything you need to know.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okey-doke.
Yes. Okay. Anything else, gentlemen?
No, I think you're good.
Okay. Well, I think
give it as a shot and let us know.
Yeah, you've given me plenty to work with, and again, I appreciate your presence on a Saturday afternoon.
Thank you. Have fun, Scotty.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Bye bye.
Yeah, it's we really do have a number of great local shops.
Yeah, we do.
To choose from. Some of which will happily sell you new equipment. Some of the places have refurbished equipment that's still perfectly good, and many times they'll give you a warranty on that for a reasonable period of time.
Right.
So if you don't have new computer money, that level of commitment financially that you're ready to make, but you still know that you need something, you can still find a nice reliable machine to use
yep.
if you shop locally.
Yep, exactly right. And again, it's all about that warranty.
Yeah, yeah, and the relationship that you have with the people in the shop.
Right. You want to walk in and feel like you know the person behind the counter.
Yeah.
And that they're your pal.
That's right.
And you do not get that in the big box stores, and you do not get that online.
They're not incentivized.
Yeah, the person working in computers could have been working in shoes last month.
Exactly right.
You know, I mean. The department, you know, the folks move around so much in stores, depending on where they need coverage. So, yeah, right. So it could right. be somewhere else. And
guys like us, we can buy online with impunity.
We feel comfortable doing that.
Right, because we know a whole lot more about what we're doing. And if we get a
for computers.
For yes. computers, yes, yes, yes. But the average person, really, you get a face.
Yeah, they're lost.
At.
When I need to buy, you know, kitchen appliances... I go find a local shop that I can trust, who
That's
I know
exactly
can deliver
right.
to my house, and that if there's a problem, I got a number to call.
That's exactly right. I spent a long time finding a mechanic, a car mechanic, that I trusted, and I love this man. I love this man. I admit it publicly.
Okay.
I love this man.
The mechanic I've had since 1980.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Good. I don't go back quite that far. The mechanic I loved before this guy retired, and then I found this guy.
Well, my late wife introduced me to this guy because he worked, his wife worked with my late wife at Kodak. And, because our car was having trouble. And, we'll take it to my husband's shop.
Yep.
And we've been going to see Tommy since 1980.
Perfect.
Cool. He's great.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, a comment from the last, what you mentioned to the last caller about selling shoes versus computers.
Yeah.
Well, with my feet, it's a lot easier to buy a computer online than it is to buy shoes online.
Oh, I know that's true.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
So the trick to the shoes online is you got to go over to Amazon's got that Zappos company, and then you can buy a whole bunch of shoes and send back the ones you don't want.
That is nice. And but you're right. I have very weird feet. And I've always bought locally from nice companies. And most of those are gone now, I'm afraid.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right, Dave. You know, if it's...
Well, anyway, yeah, kicking and screaming into the 19th century, I actually bought a tablet yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. And before I even dig into it, I had a couple of questions. One, my understanding is that when you're working on the 3G or 4G network, you don't need to worry about VPN? Or do you?
I don't think VPN's ever a bad thing.
No.
Here's the deal. Anytime you connect to anything, your data are going through multiple other servers, which are owned by multiple other people.
Right.
And so, you know, let's say you're going to apple.com or google.com on your tablet with 3G or 4G. Well, okay, maybe you trust, say, Verizon, who's your provider. But then from Verizon, where does it go before it gets to Apple?
Well, okay. I guess what I meant was in comparison to, like, Wi-Fi at the airport, where they can pick the signal up right then and there.
Well, yeah, well, there's a thing called Stingray, which is not common,
right.
But it can pretend to be a local tower and force you to connect to it so that they can steal the data coming through that as well. But that's not common. It's not something that's going to happen around, you know, regularly to people.
I would say you are technically right, but VPN would still always be the better choice. If your information or the things that you're talking about or your comfort level with privacy is warranted,
right.
VPN would always be a better choice.
For the average person, the simple fact that you're going to a website that is secure, HTTPS, instead of just HTTP,
right.
Keeps you fairly secure.
Right.
But if you're somewhere where you're worried about people eavesdropping on whatever you're doing, including where you're going, whether or not they can read the packets that come back, is a separate issue, but just where you're going, then having a VPN is probably the better way to go.
Right. Well, I'm going to be traveling across the country, so who knows?
Right.
I got another question.
Yeah.
But I
can sorry, Dave. Hold on. We got to take a quick break.
Yep.
But stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Dave from Canandaigua, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Dave from Canandaigua, New York, still on the line. What's up, Dave?
Well, you know, it's been so long, I got to remember the reason I called. The other one with this tablet, it's a Galaxy Tab A.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which sounds like a bottom-of-the-line thing, maybe, but yeah, it's enough. I think it's enough of what I need.
Okay.
But it would be nice to actually get online with my laptop, and I wondered if I can use the Galaxy as like a modem to connect to the 3G network into my computer.
It depends. What network are you on?
Verizon?
Yes. Here's the deal. One of the things that happened years ago was the FCC
yep.
gave Verizon a whole bunch of spectrum.
Which you can think of like real estate.
Wireless spectrum, right.
Yep.
But it had been public spectrum. I'm not going to get into the politics. But one of the deals they made was that people would be able to use it as hotspots.
Okay, that was a concession they had to make.
So the theory is you should be able to download an app. If it's not already built into your Galaxy Tab A,
okay.
You should be able to download an app that is a hotspot program.
Gotcha.
But check to see if, in fact, in the settings for wireless, the settings for your 4G network, if you can turn on a hotspot. Now you want to be careful again because you want to make sure you set a password and yada yada yada, right?
Right.
But make sure you do when you do that, you should be able to then use it as a hotspot. I used to do that with my phone back when we had. Unlimited data.
Sure, right.
I used to do that with my phone.
Okay, and then I connect with either a cable or does that Wi-Fi?
Oh, Wi-Fi. Okay. It becomes a hotspot, so it becomes a little, which is why you want to put a password on it.
Right, back to VPN also.
Right. You put a password on it, and then your laptop will connect as if it were a local wireless hotspot.
Right.
It is a local wireless hotspot.
Yeah.
Okay.
It may be a little rougher on your battery to do both of these things at once, but
right. I can plug it into a charger in the vehicle. So
right.
Yep. That's exactly right. I used to do that. We used to take the train to New York every once in a while, and I'd plug in my phone, and my wife could do Farmville all the way to New York City.
Wonderful.
All right. I guess that'll cover it. Thank you.
There you go. Thanks.
Thanks, yep. Dave.
Bye bye.
Oh boy.
Yeah. All right. To the one time we were making the trip and some lady stopped and said, to my wife, they have Wi-Fi in the train? She said, no, my husband set up a hotspot. And the woman, that is so sweet.
So romantic.
That is so, yeah. Like, I wouldn't do that for my wife normally, but, you know, I'm a nice guy.
That's right. Okay.
I wasn't going to let anybody else on it. I'm not that nice a guy.
Oh, boy.
But, all right.
Let's hit the news.
Let's hit the news. This just in.
Yes.
You remember Chromebooks, don't you? We were just talking about them 15 minutes ago.
My memory isn't quite that bad yet.
Good. Who are you again?
Huh?
They're the small, fairly inexpensive notebooks that are supposed to eat seriously into Microsoft's market share by showing the world that you don't need a big operating system to get big work done, just a lightweight one to get you internet access, devices you could buy for less than the price of a piece of software, hardware that would finally prove to the world there's no need for Microsoft Office and other big client-based software.
Okay.
A free copy of Google Docs would do. Things didn't quite turn out that way. Windows laptops are thriving, and Chromebooks are rarely used in enterprises. Microsoft Office still rules the Office suite world. Microsoft has no need to worry, right? Well, not quite.
Okay.
There are signs that Chromebooks are a bigger long-term threat to Microsoft than you might imagine. A shift from Windows laptops to Chromebooks won't come overnight or even in the next few years, but over the long term, they're likely to be a serious competitor. The reason? Chromebooks sell big in education.
That's true.
They're unseating Macs in schools.
Yep.
2 years ago, for the first time, Chromebooks outsold Macs in schools. Schools are a great market for Google. But Chromebooks are also Trojan horses. Children and teens use them for schoolwork and more. When they get Chromebooks, they also get free subscriptions to Google's G Suite of apps. If kids grow up using G Suite and Chromebooks, there's a reasonable chance they'll use them when they get older.
That's what Apple did in the 70s and 80s.
Exactly right.
Here I am.
As the Jesuits used to say, give me your child before he's 7, he's mine for life.
Could be.
Exactly right. According to a 2017 article in the New York Times, more than half of the nation's primary and secondary school students, more than 30 million children, use Google education apps like Gmail and Docs and Chromebooks, the Google-powered laptops, that initially struggled to find a purpose, are now a powerhouse in American schools. Today, they account for more than half the mobile devices shipped to schools. But wait, you might say. The Mac was popular in schools for years, and that didn't help Apple make serious inroads into Microsoft's stranglehold in businesses. That's true, but this time things are different for three reasons. One, price. Macs are more expensive than PCs, while Chromebooks are far less expensive.
True.
That makes it more likely that people will buy Chromebooks for their own computers and that enterprises will follow suit. Secondly, enterprises now are more likely to follow the user's lead on technology in this BYOD, bring your own device age.
To a point.
They're getting that way.
To a point. It kind of depends.
But they're certainly, if you come in and say, I want a Chromebook, they're not immediately going to say no way.
Well, yeah, there's
depends on what you do.
It depends on where you are and what the infrastructure looks like.
Exactly. In addition, there's G Suite. Apple never had an Office Suite that could compete with Microsoft Office. Once students get used to Google's Office Suite, they'll be more likely to use it after they graduate. Times article put it this way. Google makes $30 per device by selling management services for the millions of Chromebooks that ship to schools.
Yeah.
But by habituating students to its offerings at a young age, Google obtains something much more valuable.
When
students graduate, mm-hmm. Google makes it easy for them to move all their mail and documents from their school accounts to their personal accounts, and there are people who've gone through their entire college career with G Suite.
Sure.
The upshot of all this, Windows hardware continues to rule in enterprises, but Chromebooks may one day prove a serious competitor as students make their way into the workforce.
Right.
Think Chromebooks will take over the world? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
And that can have a domino effect also, because if you get the kids hooked on that, and now they, you know, whether it's, college kids.
Right.
And the parents all of a sudden need some help deciding on a computer. And the kids are already hooked on Chromebooks. Well, here, Ma. Here, Dad. Yeah, you guys want something simple? Boom. They sit there and pull them right on in. Or even in high school. You know, they got to learn to use the Google Docs and that type of stuff.
Right. It's a more focused tool.
That's exactly right.
And a Windows machine and a Mac is a bit more general purpose tool. And I think the better comparison might be a Chromebook versus a dedicated tablet.
That's exactly right. The big thing is I find, and I don't know what you find, but I find at RIT, very technical school, many students carry Chromebooks.
Sure.
They've got a very high-end desktop at home,
right,
in their dorm, wherever. but they carry around a Chromebook because they don't need more for classes.
Yeah, when it comes to note-taking or miscellaneous email or what have you, the Chromebook's ability to have all-day battery life, the ability to get on Wi-Fi, is really all they need. They just need a terminal that has a screen and an actual keyboard.
Yep.
And I think that's what they're looking for. And this is the tool that fits that.
Right. And they're collaborating with other students through Google Docs.
Right.
You create a group and you can all edit the same document simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool.
You can chat with each other. You can video chat with each other. You can do whatever you want to do while you're doing that. They learn to work that way and they like it.
Yeah, and that is the more common way that younger people in the workforce are getting together. It is about collaboration in real time. It's about getting a project done. It's less about hierarchical control, and it's more about interacting with your peers.
One of my students last year, at the end of school year, got a job with a company that's not even on this coast. And I said, well, are you going to move? He said, no. We do it all remotely. We all do it through Google Docs.
Right.
We edit documents together. We video chat. I don't even have to put pants on if I don't want to. He was right.
And companies are doing that because, you know, rental space for corporate space is expensive. And then you've got, it's an additional load. You've got to have people that are willing to drive into the office. And if you can use the internet to kind of be the death of distance between all of the people involved, then that there's a significant business reason to invest in subsidizing your internet service for your house.
Right. And mm-hmm. Well, exactly. It's cheaper to pay the $50 a month than it is to provide, you know, 10 square feet,
right,
heat, light.
And what you're paying. Yeah.
A parking space.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, all of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if the product that you're making is what I'll call knowledge work. If
right.
it's based on research and you working on things that you know about,
right.
then where you do it is not
tech support.
As important.
People can be anywhere in the world. We mm-hmm. found that out.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I mean, I know a company that has people spread all over the globe building 3D printers.
Again, for anything you do where the output is able to be expressed digitally,
right.
then this can happen. You know, manufacturing is never going to be like this.
Right.
Or
right.
Construction. It's never going to be like this. But for a certain class of work, this is acceptable and can make a really good business sense. But back to the Chromebook thing, it's all about, if you're a student, the other thing you worry about is, what happens if my laptop gets stolen? What happens if I accidentally drop it? What happens if, you know, it falls off the roof, or I leave it on the roof of my car as I drive away, or things like that? And with a Chromebook, that really goes away. So it ticks a lot of boxes for students and for their parents.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. Two things. One thing about the Chromebook.
Yeah.
We bought one for my daughter. I already have a Samsung that I bought a few years ago, but we bought a Acer for my daughter, a 15.6-inch.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she's going to Finger Lakes Community College right now.
Okay.
And works out great for her. She loves it. Absolutely loves it. It's got a great size screen. And really, they accommodate her well. They let her bring it down to the, I forgot the area they go where they do the printing, and she can connect right to a printer from it.
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
And, well, it does everything.
She can print from it right from Google Docs. And if she needs to hand something in a Word format, they give them free access to 365.
That's really nice. But also Chromebooks, if you are on Google Docs, if you pull down the file menu, you can do a download as.
Right.
And you can download it as a Word, an open document format, rich text, PDF, plain text, a web page, an EPUB. So you can throw it right in your e-book reader.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, that Word export is right there.
Yep. But I find that most of these schools will accommodate Chromebooks. And if you have a PC, they most of them give you a subscription while you're at the school to 365 the whole time you're there.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah. Second thing, gentleman said about the tablet.
Yeah.
Got to be careful when you're buying those tablets. Those Samsung Galaxies are nice tablets, but a lot of them are running KitKat.
Yes. And what Mark is talking about is the version of Android that's on the tablet. Older ones cannot upgrade to the newest versions of the Android operating system. They just don't have the oomph.
I think the newest operating system I've seen in like Best Buy on a Samsung tablet was Lollipop, which is still, what, 3-4 versions old?
Yeah, right. They're alphabetical suites. So we're up to P, which I think is peanut butter cup.
Okay.
I think.
I haven't kept pace with that.
I don't remember. So if you're back on K for Kit Kat or L for Lollipop, you're back a ways.
And I know on Kit Kat, I have an old Galaxy Tab I bought when Kit Kat was kind of new.
Yep.
And a lot of the apps I want won't run on it. Hulu won't run on it as an update. It'll run until you uninstall it. Then you can't reinstall it.
Right.
Yeah. So you're going to find a lot of these things that they won't run on anything that old.
Right.
So you got to be careful. The price might be right, but you may not run a lot of apps out of the App Store because they just don't go back that far.
Right. I have an old Galaxy Tab 4, which is a 7-inch tablet, and all I do is use it as an e-book reader. So I've got the Nook app and the Kindle app and the Google Books app and a couple of other programs to run to read other formats.
Right.
And as long as those run on it, I'm happy. But you're right. I can't use it for much of anything else.
Right. So, like I said, just because the price is right doesn't make it very feasible to use if you want to run Play Store apps.
Yep. Yep. Good point. Thanks, Mark.
That's right. And I even noticed running Play Store apps on the Chromebook. A lot of them will, but certain ones will not work.
Okay.
Right.
They say that it's not compatible with the device.
Right, and it depends on which device you have. Some of them absolutely require a touch screen.
Right.
And et cetera. So they will generally run well on the newest Chromebooks, but those are also more expensive. Certainly touch screens are way more expensive than non-touch screens.
Well, that's one caveat someone can do for a tablet. If you wanted to do both, you could maybe get it in one by getting a more expensive foldback top.
Right. All right.
Both on it.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep.
We got to go. Thank you. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
No matter how hard we try, he just stays Dennis
Worcester.
Yeah,
for 2 hours consistently.
44 minutes after the hour. Now. Well, an hour and 44 minutes anyway, so far.
Well, he got here early.
He did. It's pretty much 2 hours. We have nobody on the phone, so I'm going to read another. News item.
What's going on in the news, Nick?
But Dave, hold on though. Just for, reiterate though on that Chromebook though.
Yeah,
I think we've been saying it right along that Microsoft is still running scared because the Chromebooks are digging deeper and deeper into the school systems.
Yeah.
And becoming the item of choice. Because, as we've said before, there's no operating system to maintain. It doesn't get viruses, doesn't get spyware, doesn't get malware. And, if something happens to it, I just reset it and put it back to, say, if I'm a school system, I have one set program that I put on it for, say, the fifth grade.
Yep.
And I can flash it back to that, and boom, hand it back to the kid. Nothing, you know, doesn't take me long at all. You don't have to have a lot of administrative helps supporting that network and the machines and all that other stuff.
Yeah,
because they're just about fail-proof as far as, you know, worrying about breaking them or anything else.
Yeah. The management tools for them are almost entirely online. The costs are very predictable. The repair costs are very predictable if it needs repairs. But the number one thing is if your student is not saving anything to that local machine and the machine goes wonky for whatever reason, let's just say that, you know, the Q key on the keyboard stops working, the student can bring it to you and say, this is just not working. And you can hand them a spare machine. They log in as themselves and they see all their stuff again.
Yeah.
They don't have to be without a machine for a week while you send it out to get repaired. So, and if you're in a classroom, you know, you're in school around here 180 days a year. So if you're going to take 2 days out, you know, you're dropping 1%. You're down to 99% effective for that student.
And how many times do you buy a new machine and it's just not quite right. You spend weeks tweaking it.
Right.
With a Chromebook, you log in.
It's an appliance.
And depending on how fast your network connection is, 10 minutes later, you've got the same machine you've always had.
That's right. Yeah, it's really just an appliance.
Yep.
It's a local view of your settings as they exist across the internet from somewhere else.
It's quite amazing. I had one of my students do that just a couple of weeks ago. He had a brand new Chromebook. I said, what happened? He said, one of my roommates was drunk. I'm sure it was one of his roommates,
it's
not
roommate,
him.
Right?
sat on my Chromebook, yada, yada, yada. He said it was $170 Chromebook, so I just bought another one.
Right.
It's still cheaper. Two of those cheaper than a laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Than a Windows laptop or a Mac laptop.
Right. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And school districts, it's really, they're making great inroads there. And because they've listened and they supply a product that meets what the school really needs.
And it's just about zero cost to maintain.
Right.
You don't have a ton of IT people that have to sit there and worry about updates and everything else. It's a win-win all the way around.
And they amortize quickly, but more importantly, I've seen schools take them back at the end of a school year,
right,
hand them out to a new group next year. Now, that essentially costs them zero.
That's right.
So, $30.
The long-term capabilities and the long-term structure of how they're doing things just is more attractive.
Yep.
But that's what's wonderful about competition and having several different groups to all come in and say, well, here's what we think would be great. And schools get to make that choice.
It's one of the things that Microsoft is now doing with DAS, D-A-A-S, Desktop as a Service.
Yes. Is that like that VDI stuff they
Well, they're essentially trying to do something similar. It lives locally, but it's managed by Microsoft.
Okay.
And it's a hybrid kind of neither fish nor fowl kind of thing. They're stuck with an architecture that doesn't lend itself to any of that.
Yeah. Apple has been actively, I'll say, revising how they handle their management tools over the past several years.
I will say the very first version of the Apple management software for iPads stunk on ice.
Oh, absolutely. Workgroup Manager?
It was horrifyingly bad.
Yeah. Profile Manager.
Profile Manager, yeah. It was horrifying.
It was rough. It has gotten way, way better. And you can do a lot of that remotely now.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hey, Nick. Just to follow up, previous gentleman was talking about the operating systems on the Galaxy Tabs. I got looking at that after our conversation Thursday night. And the newest operating system I can find on any 7-inch Galaxy tablet is Lollipop 5.1.
Yep.
Did the tablets lag behind the phones?
Yes. What happens is this. When you have a product like the Galaxy Tab, nobody makes a 7-inch tablet anymore. So the hardware that's in them is old, and the old hardware can only take the old software. So you will find that I can't update my tablet anymore. It's stuck, I believe, on Lollipop as well. And you need to buy a newer tablet, but everybody's, and I blame Apple for this as well. Everybody's going with 10-inch tablets and 12-inch tablets and even the 8-inch tablets are not paperback sized.
Android did it first with their huge phones, and now Apple's catching up to that. And it's like,
we're not talking about phones, I'm talking about tablets.
I think they chase each other.
So to get to the heart of what you just said, they're not making 7-inch tablets anymore.
I'm seeing very few of them.
Okay, so if to go back to my looking at something that I want to use as an e-reader, if I want something in the 7-inch format, if I want reasonably new hardware that will be compatible with things, I'm probably better off looking at an e-reader rather than a Samsung Galaxy Tab.
Well, it depends on what you're going to do with it. Now, like I said, I have an older and a Galaxy Tab 4, and the thing I like about it is that I can buy books from Kindle, from Amazon, that's Kindle, from Nook, from Barnes & Noble, from Google, from any place else, and run them on other programs. And I don't have, and I can run all of those, and since that's all I use it for, I don't care that it can't run other things, because I have a phone that does all those things.
True.
To me, it's very much the argument we were just having about Chromebooks versus desktops. I've got a giant desktop at home, so I carry a Chromebook. I've got a phone that does all the modern things I need to do, but when I read, I want something that's a 7-inch book-sized reader that lets me read from anybody's store. And that's really all I need it for. I don't need it to do 1,000 other things. Yeah. But that's me. I mean, you have to decide what it is you're going to do with it, what you need it for. Is it replacing your phone, or are you really looking at it as an e-reader? Because if it's an e-reader, you're limiting what you can do with it anyway. You probably can't run any apps on it. At least on the Android operating system, you can run some apps.
Yeah.
And that limit is okay. It's just a decision you have to make as a consumer.
Right. Exactly right.
Do you want a specialized tool or a general tool?
I have a couple Chromebooks. I got a full laptop, and I've got an LG phone that does everything I want it to do and probably stuff I haven't even figured out how to do yet.
Right. So the question becomes...
I'm strictly looking for an e-reader that's the right size to read books on.
Right. And so you have to decide, do I want to pay for redundancy?
Yeah.
Right. So do you want to pay the extra money that lets you then do all the same things you're already doing on all your other devices? Or are you really just looking for an e-reader and the Galaxy Tabs give you the freedom to buy from any bookstore?
Okay. Well, that also explains why I'm not finding anything with a newer operating system.
Right.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Thanks for giving us a call.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
It really comes down to, this is the same decision everybody has to make. Do you need a device that does everything?
Right.
Then you will pay for a device that does everything.
Yep.
Or do you need a device that does a specific thing, which means now you can save some money?
You can save some money, and chances are good it may be simpler to use. The interface may be simpler. The capabilities may be less, but perhaps the battery life goes up. There may be other advantages.
Right.
If it's easier to use, it has decent battery life, and it's what I call a unitasker. It just does one thing, but it does it really, really well,
right,
such that it's a pleasure to use, and it's less complicated than something that may have the ability to replace multiple, what I'll call appliance devices.
Right.
Then you know, it's a decision to make, and there's no wrong decision. It's just whatever works best for you.
Right. And in terms of my Galaxy Tab 4, really all I want to do is read ebooks. And what's nice about it is I can also have my calendar on it.
Yeah.
I can also have the weather on it.
Uh-huh.
But that's not essential. A, it's not essential. And B, that runs in every version of the operating system.
Sure.
So I don't have to worry about that, right? So that in general, I find that makes me less worried about which version of the operating system I'm running. I know we all want to be the latest and greatest and best immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, if I don't need it, I don't need to pay to have it.
Sometimes simplicity is a feature by itself.
That's exactly right. Hence, bringing it all the way around to the Raspberry Pi.
That's right. Wonderful callback.
Hey, thank you very much. All right, that's it. That music tells me that sadly, or joyfully, depending on your feeling, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, so I will. Thanks, Dave. I especially want to thank Dennis Worster.
Oh,
it was always
you.
A joy to have you here.
Always fun to be here.
And you always enhance the show. Not that we don't love you, Steve.
Steve's great. We love Steve.
But we also love Dennis.
Thanks.
And I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow! It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are indeed member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.